Anytime I see a student or an individual that I'm working with starting to get dysregulated, what that tells to me is they're having big feelings in that moment. They need help regulating. And one of the most effective and powerful ways that I can support them to regulate in that moment is to identify a competent role for them, or a role that I know they will be competent in.
Welcome back to the Upper Grand District School Board Social Learning Road Trip. Today, we welcome back Linda K. Murphy, author of The Co-Regulation Handbook. Welcome back, Linda.
Thank you. Great to be back.
I'm also excited to welcome Ruby DeLille, a longtime friend and principal within the Upper Grand District School Board, to help me co-host today, so we can take all of the theories that we learned last time and find out how we can use them both within our classrooms as well as within the office. Because as a principal, Ruby, I'm sure that you have a lot of experiences and value to bring to our conversation today around how to work with our learners. Welcome, Ruby.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So last week we had a great introduction to the connection between declarative language and co-regulation, and we want to use these tools with our students and how to use these tools with our students. This week, we are ready to dive into a crash course in co-regulation that will give us a broad overview of how to establish co-regulation with our students. So as a quick review, Linda, would you be able to share with our listeners how co-regulation is more a balanced dance between two people than a recipe driven by the adult?
I would love to. So co-regulation essentially is this powerful foundation for communication where we are, as communication partners, responding contingently moment to moment to the other person. So that balance is created because I don't necessarily know what my response will be until I see that other person's communication in front of me. So this dance develops turn to turn as we respond each turn to each other, versus something that is more agenda or compliance based, where the adult maybe has set expectations or things that they're prompting the student to do, which ends up giving that student or that other communication partner less freedom to be dynamic in their communication or less able to contribute of themselves. So it becomes more contrived versus the dynamic dance that we know authentic communication to be.
I'm already picturing those awkward dances where you have like the father at the wedding who's attempting to direct his daughter in every single move on the dance floor and it just not going well. So this perfect imagery works for me. And again, as educators, we now need to learn how to step back and allow our students to be a part of that dance as well.
Right.
Linda, many of us are familiar with self-regulation. What is the difference between this term and co-regulation?
So the way I think about it is that these two things, of course, are highly related. Self-regulation is just when a person is able to regulate themselves. So they just have the tools or ability to manage themselves through the ups and downs of life. So self-regulation doesn't mean that I'm calm all the time. It just means that I'm able to manage my responses in a way that feels comfortable to myself and to the moment at hand. Co-regulation is almost the stepping stone to self-regulation, but it also is continued to be needed throughout life for all of us. And it's just when we become regulated with the help of another person, or we co-regulate. I think it's most obvious when individuals are really young, like a newborn needs their caregiver to regulate when they're hungry or when they're hurt. But again, as I said, we continue to do this, all of us, throughout life. Like, say, for example, I'm really upset about something and I'm having trouble regulating. If there's a trusted person or communication partner that I can talk to and just kind of share my feelings and get it out and bounce ideas off of them, that might then help me regulate or feel better. So co-regulation is just when we use a communication partner or a trusted communication partner to help ourselves regulate, especially in those moments when it's too hard to do it all by ourselves.
And I love how in the book you talk about this idea that as an infant, it's obvious that the parent needs to come in there and help to co-regulate. We see that. But then we don't just automatically get to this state of self-regulation. There is a very long journey that comes along the way. And I think for some of us, that journey is the part that might be confusing. We understand that we need to step in, we need to offer co-regulation, but the how of that is where we fumble. So I know we're going to get into this more in our future weeks, but can you give us a taste of how we might make this more attainable without making it, again, those specific set of steps, but what are some principles that we're going to be introduced to that will help us along that journey?
Yeah, so as an educator, one thing that I always think about as part of co-regulation is the idea of competent roles, or more broadly, competent, authentic, contingent roles. And I know we touched on this last time a little bit, but anytime I see a student or an individual that I'm working with starting to get dysregulated, what that tells to me is they're having big feelings in that moment. They need help regulating. And one of the most effective and powerful ways that I can support them to regulate in that moment is to identify a competent role for them, or a role that I know they will be competent in, which just means something that we both know they can do on their own in that moment in time. I do find that when our students have a competent role, or we offer them a competent role, regulation happens, because it just creates that safe, secure space. You know, even as adults, if you think about a role that you're in, when you feel competent, you are more likely to also feel very regulated in that moment. Whereas if you, as an adult, are in over your head, you're likely not to feel regulated. So as an educator, I'm always going to come back to think about, okay, what's a competent role in this moment that I can offer this student? And then the co-regulatory piece comes in when it's contingent on whatever my role might be at that moment. And the authenticity part just means it's real to this moment in time, to what we're doing in this environment, versus a contrived role that might not feel authentic or real to the student.
I can relate how that connects to everything in a school. We have many students that struggle a bit with the self-regulation, and in those moments, breaking it down and giving them those responsibilities, those competent roles, helps across all different settings within a school. So thank you for breaking that down for us. Do you see these roles as always being between an adult and a child? Or can they also be created for peers or peer models?
Yeah, great question. So it does not have to always be between an adult and a child. It is always going to come back to what's competent for that student in the moment. So what we know a lot of the time is that adults are more predictable than peers. So depending on where the student at is in their skill development or their regulation at that moment, an adult might be a more grounding communication partner, but if they're at a place where they can handle more dynamic exchanges or perhaps a little bit more uncertainty, then this certainly can be transferred to peer-to-peer interactions easily. And sometimes even one of the things that I might think about are, okay, I'm engaged in this opportunity or this activity with a student. I have my role. I have their role. It's going along well. We're all regulated. It is perhaps even becoming easy for the student. Might this be a good time for me to transfer my role to a peer? And then the same framework that we've been using becomes a peer-to-peer interaction rather than an adult to student interaction. So sometimes that can be a nice way to move it to that next level of exchange where two students are engaged in this partnership together.
Absolutely. And we can see that as a valuable model within a school, as we have learning buddies and peer models, even special peers for when students need that extra person there. We do a lot of that modeling, I think, so naturally without labeling it as such. What are your thoughts and what are you hoping for us to take away from the phrase process over product? when first trying co-regulation?
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite mindsets to always go back to ensure I'm present in the moment. So just this idea of process over product means that we understand that the learning happens on the journey there, not in the end product. So to give an example, say we are completing a puzzle together. The product would be a finished puzzle. But if we move quickly just to get the puzzle done, then we miss out on a lot of opportunities to visually scan or try something, notice, or try a piece, notice it doesn't work, and then try a different piece. So to move through trial and error or problem solving opportunities in that way. Or when we focus on the process over product, we have all these really nice opportunities for decision making and problem solving that we just, if we rush through them, again, it's just learning opportunities that that we don't get to offer our students. So where co-regulation comes in is it's really allowing us to slow down, to be present in the moment, to move an activity or an exchange with another person just one moment at a time, so that as each learning opportunity is available, we see it because we're focused on the moment in time and the process or the journey together versus just getting XYZ done. And I do know, like in my book, I talk more about this, but of course we all have time constraints as educators, and sometimes we do have to pick up our pace for all different reasons. But I think at the heart of it is we just want to keep that in mind, that if we can just think about the process and all the learning opportunities at hand, in the process, it will just help us slow down and recognize those moments when they are available to us.
And I think that's a really great place for us to rest on, because this idea of always needing to have a product or an outcome, arriving at a certain destination, definitely is something that as educators we love to land on. But I think we also do recognize the need for realizing that the process of finishing a task is just as important. And I love that idea of, again, partnering with our learners, finding out where they are, finding out those authentic roles, and pausing in those moments where we really do think that there could be a learning opportunity for co-regulation. I think that's a great place, again, for us to rest and think about. Again, appreciate Linda so much. Thank you as well, Ruby, for offering your lens on how we can start integrating these principles into our classrooms and our schools. We are so excited to chat with you again next week, Linda. We will have another special guest, Jen Meeker, Principal of Special Education, K-12, joining us, where we will step a little bit more into what co-regulation is and how we manage ourselves to help our students along the way. Thank you again.
See you then.
Thank you for listening to the Social Learning Road Trip, a podcast presented by Upper Grand District School Board. For educators within our board, you can access show notes and links to our other podcast episodes on our SharePoint page under Innovation Lab. Other listeners can find our podcast and additional information on our parent website at www.ugdsb.ca/CLS parents. If you would like to find out more information about declarative language and co-regulation, please visit Linda Murphy's site at declarativelanguage.com.